Okay, this is the hour we take your phone calls with our special guest, Paul Rademacher, author of A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. He's also the executive director of the Monroe Institute. So we'll be back with your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, sometimes when you hitchhike, you get picked up by the wrong driver. Is that possible here?
You mean as you're traveling into these other dimensions?
Yeah. Can you make a mistake? Can something happen?
Well, some people are concerned, for instance, that if they go out, they may not be able to come back into their bodies, and there's some real concern around that. But what we have found is that there's actually a fail-safe something that will bring you back every single time, and that's your bladder. No matter what, you know, eventually you're going to have to go to the bathroom, and your body's going to call you back into it so you can make that trip. As far as making a mistake, that has not been our experience. As we have put, you know, for 30,000 people through the program, if there's something that does at first appear to be terrifying, inevitably, if a person will work with it and turn toward it, it is an experience of revelation. And because one of the things that we have found is that we give people lots of tools to begin to their explorations. And setting an intention before you go, we have found to be an extremely important aspect of what we do. So, for instance, we have people recite what we call a gateway affirmation. And part of that affirmation is this statement that we're not going to allow anything to happen to us that would be less than our stated desires. And so there's a real protective presence that goes with us. So we have not had any problems that way.
Beautiful. Let's go to some calls here. Jerry in Cleveland, Ohio, first-time caller. You're up with us. Go ahead, Jerry.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, I just had a little story and a question. I basically had my mom, November in 2005, was diagnosed with stomach cancer, and less than a month later, she passed away. And, you know, it was very troubling. And I had prayed for her to contact me, let me know, you know, just to contact me. And it never happened. And up until about a month ago or 6 weeks ago, I had a dream about her. And it was the first time I had her in a dream, right, since she passed away. And then we were at a funeral, and I turned around, and she was standing there, and I says, "Mom, how can you be here? You know, you're gone." She goes, "Well, yeah, I know I'm gone, but I just wanted to let you know I'm okay, and, you know, that I'm okay, and for you not to worry." And that was very comforting, and I found out that, you know, it just made me feel really good. About a week ago, Saturday, I had a very good friend pass away. He's only 54 years old. He just died of a heart attack.
Oh.
And you know, and his wife was having a very, very hard time. Her kids, their youngest is in his last year of college, and they were just getting ready to spend the rest of their life together and everything. And she's having a real hard time. And I'm just wondering, I've never told anyone except my wife about the dream I had about my mother. And I'm just wondering if you think I should ask or let her tell her about this dream that I had just to maybe make her comfort her a little bit. You know, I'm afraid to upset her. I'm afraid that maybe she'll have unreal expectations if you know, she doesn't have a similar occurrence. But I guess that's what my question is. What, you know, I need some advice on that.
That's good. That's a good question too, Jerry. Paul, what do you think? What do you do? Do you wait for the right time or how do you handle this?
Yeah, Jerry, thank you so much for that story and also for the question, because it's really pertinent. What I've found in dealing with people who have lost loved ones is that one of the things that they need more than anything else is just someone to talk to, and they need to be able to talk about the loss and to talk about the loved one. And sometimes, you know, they'll talk to you. You don't think you can take it anymore, but one of the greatest gifts that you can give them is your presence and your ability to stand with them as they're processing that incredible pain. So I really appreciate the fact that you care enough to even ask that question. And I think if you spend time with this person and you enter into their world, you're going to be different from everybody else who doesn't have any idea what to do with it. And so right away, you're going to be kind of in a special position. And you'll see that there will come a time somewhere in those conversations, and I say conversations plural because it's going to be a long time before she's going to be able to put her life together in any way, shape, or form. But if you're there, there will come a time when you will know that it's appropriate to share your story. And because you've been with her from the beginning, it will have that much more impact for her because you've been patient with her.
Very good. And good luck, Jerry. It's not easy, Paul, is it?
Not at all. Not at all. I think that's one of some of the most difficult things that we can go through in this life is to lose a loved one, and especially to lose a child, I think is one of the most difficult things that we can possibly ever encounter.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to Cliff Village, Missouri, east of the Rockies. Joe, you're up with us. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, I was going to tell you guys about a story, and it's going to sound almost unbelievable at first, but May the 5th, the year 2000, I was 21 years old, and I had some people show up at my house. And it was such a random occurrence that they were kind of acquaintances of mine, but they weren't mm-hmm. real good friends. And needless to say, they wanted to see if I kind of wanted to hang out and party a little bit. And I said, yeah. And over the course of about 2 hours, six people in all showed up and basically gave me the worst night you can possibly imagine. That my night kind of went from bad to worse, and the fact that they were kind of there to point out a few glaring issues I had in my own personality, such as my rampant materialism, my womanizing, my violent behavior. And the thing is that night culminated with this experience where one of the kids, JT, kind of calls me out, and it's in the middle of this big sandbox out in the country in the big garage, and he says, "You are by far the most self-righteous, self-centered, egotistical, egomaniacal SOB that has ever walked the face of the earth. You have used and abused everyone and everything around you." And I just looked at him, and it pounded into my heart. And he looks at me and he says, "This isn't something we planned this week or this month." And then he looks at me and he says, "This has been planned, and we both said it in unison, since the beginning of time." And then everyone, these six people that were in this room, I noticed were standing in a circle around me. And every one of them at the same time said, "And this is the point when you die." And they all pointed their fingers at me.
Whoa.
And the next thing I know, I'm standing in the corner with these six old Indians. And I'm not talking old like people are old, but like old like turtles. And they point at me and they say, grandson, do you see what you're getting for all your lies? Do you see what you're getting for all your cheating and your stealing? Do you see this nonsense that your life was and had become? We're gonna not let you leave now. And instead, we're going to give you something you have to grow in your heart and share with everyone else. And I got to tell you guys that I feel like sharing this story with you because that night led to a series of events that ended up with me, long story short, believing I had died that night. And later, and this is really long story short, but later going through an experience in which I was paralyzed and have been paralyzed for the past 9 years, but can assure you have received the greatest miracle from that night and from my paralysis, that the things I've been able to do with my life and learn about. And one of the main things I learned about, and I recently discovered this, and this is the cusp of what I'm going to leave you with, that I discovered what the tree of life was, and that the medicine that was actually administered to me that night was a medicine that spoke of in the Bible, in Genesis, actually, chapter 30, verse 22. The holy anointing oil was actually given to me that night, and I was christened. And if you actually think of what the christening is when you look at the ingredients. The first ingredient on the list is six flowering tops of the cannabosham plant. Of course, Sulabin in 1980 confirmed that cannabosham meant cannabis. And of course, let me tell you something. The experience you have when you have people anoint you with the holy anointing oil and then basically call out your crimes in front of you, it's the illuminator of sin.
Were they right, Joe, about
They were dead right. Oh, dude, they had my number. They had me pegged. With every word, it cut like knives. But the beauty part was this. I didn't know I was evil until I had the light of truth shine on my soul. It's the idea that I had always just, I played ball. I did what everybody else did. I was a drinking, hard partying, go boy. And to look at how I was living and the gaping errors that I had made in my life, that I literally came to these revelations through the Tree of Life, through cannabis. And I could go on for days.
Well, let's get Paul's reaction to what was an incredible turnaround in your life and your story. Why does it take sometimes, though, Paul, people to point this out to you? You just can't see it yourself.
Well, we tend to be kind of blind to our own essence. But, you know, in Joe's case, it sounded as if this was something that was predestined for him right from the beginning and was no accident whatsoever. Joe, what an incredible story. And as you were talking about it, it reminded me so much of other stories of initiation. And part and parcel to initiation ceremonies that have been used from the beginning of time, and by initiation I mean moving into a different perspective on your life and encountering, as you did, beings that were beyond the physical world. That part and parcel of that is this death and resurrection that happens, and it can happen in incredible ways. And in your case, you know, it sounded as if you died in an emotional level, and it sounds as if to some extent you died at a physical level as well, only to be reborn into this new form that now has the paralysis, and yet even in that you're able to discover the mystery and the wonder of it all in a situation that somebody looking from the outside would say, oh my gosh, that's a tragedy, but you know differently because you've been through it, and that's tends to be the nature of initiation.
So what a turnaround. He must have been out of control in the beginning, huh? Must have been. Baytown, Texas, Scott on the wild card line. Go ahead, Scott. Scott, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Paul, I'd really like to validate your story. I respect immensely what you're doing. For those of us who know, it's once you know, you want everyone to know. And I wish that when I could share my experience with people, I had something more than words to use. Words fall far short of explaining to people that we are truly spiritual beings having a human experience right now. And, my experience led me to have one excellent mentor. Do you remember Dr. George Rodinia?
I'm not familiar with that name.
Nor am I.
In Dr. Raymond Moody's book, he was the Soviet that was the doctor in the Soviet Union that was killed and in the morgue. And when they started doing the autopsy, he came back and brought back information that there's absolutely no way he could have gotten any other way. He's the longest documented near-death experience on record. But anyway, he was an atheist at that time. But in 1994, he was the keynote speaker at the United Nations on emerging global spirituality. And the way that he and I met is absolutely incredible. I was at a period of time growing up with the Southern Baptist beliefs that I had, and I started really questioning God for my own. Anyway, I dedicated myself to prayer every day. I'd say, God, I believe that you are still in the business of having relationships directly with people. And right now I'm confused in church dogma and different religions. And so, you know, I call out to the God of Moses, the God of Jesus, to the God of Muhammad, to be God out there. You know, reach out and find me in my stupidity and, you know, give me wisdom. Let me know who you are so I can have a personal relationship. And I prayed this for months, and I was really starting just to become an atheist, just to say it all must be something silly, whatever. Well, I can assure you, on December 23rd, 2000, I absolutely for sure was drawn into the presence of God. And I was in absolute awe. But the one thing that I never anticipated was the responsibility that comes with wisdom. I was praying for this wisdom to see myself and to understand my place in the world. And it was, I could see nothing before me but just perfect light, but it was the most familiar feeling I'd ever experienced.
And you know the old saying, Scott, be careful what you wish for. Sounds like you got it. Thanks for that call. Let's go to Oregon. Michael, west of the Rockies, your turn. Michael, go ahead.
Hello. I just like to say this is the most important show in history, and you're all geniuses, and I believe that both of you are helping enlighten and us too, and we're going to evolve as a human species. I just want to share a couple things, and I have a couple questions. I lost a child 23 years ago. It's something I never would ever get over from, but I got through it, and it made me grow immensely. Let me tell you that. I was wondering, I have a couple questions. Do you believe that the universe came first and then consciousness and the natural order of things came next? Or was it the other way around, like we always thought that there was God or this consciousness floating around in the middle of nothingness, and all of a sudden God created everything? And then I have another question. Do I have to travel back east to – I'm going to check out your website tomorrow, the Monroe Institute. Do I have to travel back east to Virginia? And one more question real quick, and then I'll let you go. I tried to get a hold of you, George, via email, and I know you probably get – thousands and thousands of emails and everything.
Keep them coming, Michael.
But I believe that we are all part of God, which just happens to be my email address via Yahoo. If you could answer me, I'd love to correspond with you.
I'll look at it and send it again just to be on the safe side, if you would. Let's take him real quickly for the first one. What came first, the universe or consciousness? And we got about 30 seconds for that answer. But we'll talk more about it when we come back, Paul. But what came first?
Well, I wasn't there, to my knowledge, when it happened, but, you know, I think that the modern physics is kind of beginning to provide an answer for us, and they're beginning to think that everything is energy in the first place, and everything is consciousness, and so that's really what the basis of all reality.
It is a paradox of a question, and we'll come back and answer the question about traveling to Virginia, where the Monroe Institute is, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, we're still taking your holiday stories for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day night. So if you would, send Tommy an email at holidaystories1, that's the number one, holidaystories1@yahoo.com. Please include your phone number so he can get back to you and tell you how we're going to use your story on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. You know, lots of people can't get in that night because the phones are jammed. Send us a story. HolidayStories1@yahoo.com, and please include your phone number. Paul, let's get back to the traveling part of his question. Do you have to go to Virginia to do it, or can you do it online? You have to be there, don't you?
Well, yes and no. We also offer programs out on the West Coast. We have a strategic alliance with the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which is located in Petaluma, California, and so we do our introductory course out there plus one other course at this point in time. So that's an option for people who are out on the West Coast. And again, if you want to just get a taste of it for a two-day program, you can log on to our website and see if there's an outreach facilitator near you, or you can call our office and we can see if there's somebody by you there as well. But if you really just want to start at a very basic level, we also have CDs that are available that with a vast array of exercises that you can adapt for any number of different applications. And so that's probably the simplest and easiest way to get started on it.
Okay, very good. Back to the calls we go. We'll go to Cerritos, California. Charlene, you're up with us. Hey, Charlene.
Hi. How's it? I wanted to first wish you, George, your family, and your guests there, and the staff, and all the Coast to Coast listeners a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, you too. Thanks. Very kind.
And I have a question, and also I'm thinking and praying for your friend.
Oh, it's a nightmare, but I'll talk more about that next week.
I have a question, and I was thinking I would relay my dream in relation to the question. Shall I relay my dream first?
Yeah.
Okay. This was several nights ago. I was in a white light. You know how when you look up at the sky and the sun shines on the cloud and it's really bright and light? That's what this was like. I was surrounded in all white light. And there were two gentlemen there, and I was there. And I felt like there were other women around behind me, though I couldn't see anybody. And there was one particular woman I felt, but I didn't really see anybody. I just had the impression of it. The first gentleman asked the question, which one is it? The second gentleman looked at me. I raised my hand, and I said, it's me. And the second gentleman said, it's her. It was like he said it with definitiveness. Then the other gentleman repeated after him as if in confirmation, said, it is her. And then I woke up from the dream, and when I woke up, I was kind of woozy, kind of fuzzy, weak. Kind of like I had to get my equilibrium back in balance or something. But it felt very positive. It didn't feel negative at all. So what my question is, how do you know if something is wishful thinking because it's something that you really want, it's your desire, or if something is something you should pay attention to, that something is telling you something, that it's more than just a dream? You know what I'm saying?
Or intuition. How do you know when to react to it? How do you know if it's real or if it's just not your inner self trying to make it up, Paul?
That's a question that we get all the time with the work that we do. And ultimately, you know, it's something that you have to be convinced of it. And you'll know eventually what the implication of that dream is over time, because it will either play out in a certain way or it will just fade away. But there are a number of markers for us as we go through this work that help us to know that something is real. For instance, if you get some kind of information that you gained, and you couldn't have gotten that information any other way, and then you're able to go back and verify it in some way, that's an indication that the experience has some reality to it. If you encounter somebody maybe in your experience, and then they come back and they confirm that encounter in some way, that helps to give it some validity for you as well. But one of the I think more interesting things is that when you start on this journey, inevitably you're going to get pieces of a puzzle, and this dream that you've had, Charlene, may be the beginning of a series of dreams or a series of pieces of a puzzle that will start to give you more and more information over time. And when you start to see that puzzle emerge, it's a wondrous thing, because you start to realize that there's a real genius that is acting in the background, and that all of this is orchestrated from beginning to end. And when that happens, it leaves no doubt in your mind that this is a real experience. But beyond that, you know, if you find as a result of this that it has an impact on your life, if you start to make changes because of it, or you feel like you're growing because of it, that's another indication that this is a real and very important aspect for you to really pay attention to. I'd pay attention to it regardless, because it sounds like it was a very profound thing for you.
Okay, very good. Go ahead, Paul.
Or it just wasn't your ordinary garden variety kind of dream.
No, not at all. Racine, Wisconsin. Tim, you're on with Paul on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I'd like to ask if you and your guest tonight have heard of George Ives Gurdjieff and or Ouspensky, if that rings a bell.
Yes, I read P.D. Ouspensky's book, and I forget the title of it, but, you know, he was basically talking about his experiences with Gurdjieff. Yes, I'm familiar with that.
You know, it sounds kind of like what you're expressing tonight. To me, it sounds very much about what they were expressing, and you probably know by reading some of the literature that there's groups all around the country and the world that... or at least in the past, have kind of expounded on their teachings, of which were to try and get away from the kind of the preconditioned human self and find yourself in terms of becoming one with the real self, which is kind of a universal consciousness, so to speak. And I'm just kind of wondering if what you're talking about touches on any of these works that these guys did.
Yeah, I think that it isn't necessarily that we are tied directly to their work, but there are a lot of similarities. And, you know, the perennial wisdom has always been know thyself, and there are so many mystery schools and various techniques that have evolved down through the years that approach that question of knowing ourselves in the fullest extent. And part of that is to move beyond the beliefs that we think are rock solid and begin to at least entertain the possibility that there might be something new out there for us to learn. And so, you know, I have great respect for Ouspensky's work and Gurdjieff, but they are also part of a very long line that stretches back to the beginning of time of people who have been wrestling with this great question of who it is that we are exactly as human beings.
Okay, next up we go to Joshua Tree, California. Victoria, it's your turn on Coast to Coast.
Hi, George. Hi. I had the great privilege of being able to actually speak with Bob Monroe many years ago. I don't know if you remember Open Mind show. And anyway, it's very similar to this one. But anyway, basically, Bob Monroe had written the three books that I know of. I've read them. And the interesting thing about it is I always remembered this. At the very end of the book, he said that he wished that he was had been more spontaneous. I don't know if you remember his writing that, but and the reason being that he always said that he had projected in his mind where he wanted to go and basically stay with that. And that's where he went primarily. Well, through the years, I've been doing it since I was 9. I'm 50 now, but I've been going out of body since 9 years old. So, you know, there's all these different kinds of techniques. And I found that when I have gone into the future, which is basically where Bob Monroe had gone as well, and the past, there were certain techniques that I used. And one of them, I found myself spinning. And I would spin forward, and I'd know, uh-oh, they're taking me into the future, because I never thought about where I was going. I always went into different dimensions. And so I noticed that certain individuals, where they go, okay, I want to go across the street, or I want to go to such and such building or whatever, they ended up actually only getting to that point. But when you move spontaneously and I get out of body and I'll go, okay, guides, teachers, or whatever, all right, take me where I'm supposed to go and what I'm supposed to see, I found that I would move into future, past. Both Bob and I both saw the same kinds of airplanes and the same flooding, the same mountains here in California, that kind of thing. But I don't want to freak everybody out. But the point is, one of the interesting things is...
I think you already have.
In downtown L.A., back then, when the flooding was, there were all these condominiums, right? And then all these years, there were never any condominiums there or anything. Well, if you live in Los Angeles area, you'll see that there are all these townhouses and condominiums going up on that freeway. And I remember that exact thing being back then. So I don't know when it's going to be. It's kind of blocked that out of my mind, but I do recall that. One of the questions that I wanted to ask you is this. Do you know, because I've done this before, between 2 to 4 p.m., this is for your audience as well, for to help them to be able to experience that, between 2 and 4 p.m. and a.m., there are these windows. And again, when just before the sunrise, if you keep your mind very sharp, you can either use a mantra and meditation. But if you keep your mind sharp and then you relax the body and go back to sleep, just the energy of that sun rising and the focus of the mind, that can pop you into a lucid dream experience. And from there, people actually can move into others. And there's a distinct difference between a lucid dream experience and the out-of-body state. So maybe you can elaborate on that as well.
Okay, Victoria. Go ahead. Paul, you want to give this a try?
Well, it's interesting she mentions the 2 to 4 o'clock in the morning time period. I have recently started getting up at that hour of the morning to meditate because I have too found that that is kind of a window.
Perfect. Turn on Coast to Coast, Paul.
Yeah, right. But I think part of the reason why that's a window is because the rest of the world is so quiet and so much activity has died down, and so that the veil between this world and the worlds beyond starts to thin out a bit, and it's a little bit easier to start moving between dimensions. And of course, if you're listening to this radio program, you're going to move between dimensions anyway, for sure. So.
Okay, next up. Thank you, Victoria, for that. Michael in Portland, Oregon, it's your turn. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. First, my question actually for you guys this evening is really, where do I go from here? When I was 3 years old, I was the first memory that I really have. I had a visitation. My mom took my sister. We lived way out in the woods. She took my sister to the store, so that was like a half-hour trip for them. And I looked out the window, and I saw this being out in the yard. And I turned around, and instantaneously that being was inside of my room. And this being lays a finger in the middle of my forehead and doesn't speak to me, but essentially relays the message to me that my purpose here on Earth is to gather information. And about 3 months from that point, I had lost all the hair on my body completely. It's a disease they call alopecia, but whatever. Anyway, I lost all of the hair on my body completely. Mm. And at a very young age, starting at 4, 5, and 6, developed a very high level of, computing as far as being able to do complicated math, equations. Being able to spell very complicated, words, being able to, do advanced, reading, or just very educationally advanced. And from a very early age to have been able to almost instantaneously or within a few seconds be able to pay people as far as like down to their true essence, I guess you would say. And I've never been able to share this necessarily with anybody because the family that I come from would probably have me locked up. It would think that I was crazy. But listening to you over the years has definitely reaffirmed that I'm not so.
You're not crazy, Michael.
Thank you. Because I was worried about that for a while. But I truly believe that, my purpose on this earth is to gather information. And I even held it. We'll just kind of skip through it later on in life. I even held a sales position for 6 months until I had to pull myself out of that corporate world because I was able to peg these people down so fast that I can manipulate the situation, and it was a very evil thing for me. And not wanting to live that evil side of life, I just kind of had to pull myself out of that. I've been in music ever since, but. I'm kind of curious, the extent of my reading as far as, getting into people, because I haven't been able to talk to people about this. So I've, read, some Michael Kresner and some Bob Frisell. I listened to a lot of your guests, with this information and with...
You're going to have to come up with a question here, Michael. I've only got a minute and a half or so left.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anyway, where's the direction, the best things on my own.
All right.
Well, what we generally try to help people to do is to trust the information that they're getting in their own intuition, wherever that might lead you. So if you are able to maybe reestablish contact maybe with that being that touched you on the forehead and begin to ask that question of that being, or if you've had some other kinds of contacts, just to try to reestablish those contacts and see what kind of guidance you get from them. I think that's always the best place to start, because it was that being that started you on this amazing journey. And I know that they don't usually start you on this kind of thing, just leave you hanging. So go back to the source. I think that's where you'll find your answers.
Okay, let's see if we can get you Carol in Sarasota. One quick question. Go ahead, Carol.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. My question for Paul is this. I recently lost a young cat of mine, and that was very, very painful to me. I wanted to ask your guest if you've had any experiences or anything you can relate to me regarding their souls in other dimensions, and what I can do to help his progress along.
Okay. Do you deal with animals at all, Paul?
We have people who have encounters with animals from time to time at the Institute, and generally it's a very positive thing. Sometimes the animal will come back and actually act as a counselor for the person, so you know that might be something that you might explore. And I just to see if there's some way that you can make contact and simply invite your cat to come back to you in some way and communicate with you. I can assure you, though, that when a being passes from this life into the world beyond, they're passing into something that is truly wonderful and magical.
All right, very good. Thank you so much, Paul, for being on the program. And if I'm ever down your way in Virginia, I might take the 3-day quickie course, huh?
Oh, we'd love to have you, George, and it's such a pleasure to be on this show with you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, you get some sleep because it is 4 o'clock in the morning down in Virginia. When we come back, Robert Chapman joins us as we talk about your money on Coast to Coast AM.